This is The Pulse, stories at the heart of health, science, and innovation. I'm Mike and Scott. The beeping of monitors has become the ever-present audio wallpaper of hospital units. Medical devices monitoring patients send off alerts when something is not quite right. Heart rate is off, beep, pulse is low, beep, beep, ventilator seems to be malfunctioning, another alarm. Nurses can hear these alarms in their sleep.
Beep, beep. Yes, you dream about it.
For patients, they can be terrifying.
I can still hear that alarm today, and even when I just think about it, it gets my blood pumping and it gets the anxiety levels up.
But the thing is, the vast majority of these alarms are unnecessary.
99% of the alarms that we saw were not actionable, meaning that a true alarm, an alarm that you really needed to run in the door and save a patient, was truly like a needle in a haystack, like a 1% kind of a thing.
Chris Bonafide is a pediatrician at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. The 99% figure he just quoted applies to regular hospital units, but even in an intensive care setting, the vast majority of alarms do not mean a patient is in danger. For example, let's say the patient is a baby kicking his legs. That's what babies do. And the baby is kicking so much, the little sticker that holds the monitor sensor in place comes off.
So the device on the wall thinks that his heart rate is going way out of whack, but actually it's just fine and it's a happy kicking baby with a slightly loose kind of a lead.
Bonafide has been studying what happens when you get false alarm after false alarm, a phenomenon that's called alarm fatigue. He says when he walks around on the hospital unit, he hears the beeping, but it just fades into the background.
So when you hear this, you think...
I think it's probably nothing. I've sort of had to de-alarm fatigue myself because of the work that I'm doing, and it's actually been kind of hard.
Bonafide's been tracking how nurses respond to an alarm when they've already received lots and lots of alarms during their shift, and he found a relationship between that number and response times.
As you got up to the most extreme group, the group of nurses who had seen 80 or more alarms in the preceding 2 hours, their response time was several fold slower to future alarms when they had been exposed to that many alarms. So we thought that was pretty consistent with alarm fatigue.
How slow is slow?
We're talking difference of minutes.
This is not a new issue. People started talking about it in the 1980s when hospitals and patient monitoring became much more high-tech. At the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, Bonafide says over 1,800 different devices are used in patient care, and most of them can send off alarms. And every time that beeping goes off, a nurse on the floor is alerted and has to make a decision.
Do I stop and interrupt this task that is probably really important to go and check on that other patient? So it's a difficult decision happening for a nurse. It can happen hundreds of times just in a single shift.
You may be calculating your medication dose and drawing up your meds and your alarm beeps, so you turn around to look at your phone or to look at your patient.
That's Children's Hospital Intensive Care Unit nurse Kara Terady.
And then to being able to start that process all over again and not just pick up in the middle, so you lessen the gap for error.
So basically, once you've interrupted, you go back to square one?
Correct.
So that sounds frustrating.
It can be. It can be very frustrating. I think it's something that we've just become accustomed to in the ICU.
Interruptions have been shown to cause medical errors, and among the medical staff, nurses suffer the brunt of all that beeping because they are first in line to check and see why the alarm is going off. That may be part of the reason it's taken so long for the medical community to pay attention to this issue, says Chris Bonafide.
The attitude for a long time, I think, was probably this is a nurse's problem and not a doctor's problem. So it didn't, I don't think, rise to the level that it has gotten to now. The way that we've sort of reframed it is, you know, it doesn't matter if it's a doctor or nurse's problem, because if it's a patient's problem, then it's all of our problem.
For his research, Bonafide captured hours and hours of video in patient care rooms to find out when and why alarms go off and how quickly nurses get there. Medical student Mimi Zander reviewed this footage for the study, and she also noticed how much alarms impact patients' well-being.
As an alarm fires, I can see
if that woke the child up, and I can also see if that woke the parent up or if the parent is unsettled by the amount of alarms.
Your child is in a glass box hooked up to every conceivable kind of monitor, and you just don't know what's going on. It's frightening.
Mike Kennedy's son Alex was born just 27 weeks into the pregnancy. A tiny preemie weighing just 2 pounds, he spent 3 months in the NICU.
Our isolate was in the corner, so it was fairly far away from the nurse's station, so it took them a while to get there when something was going on.
Kennedy remembers the constant alarms and the nurses reassuring him and his wife Christine that it was nothing.
But there was one time in particular that it wasn't nothing.
The pulse ox alarm went off, and when Kennedy and his wife looked up to the monitor, they realized their son's oxygen level was going down rapidly. It fell below 30%.
And we could see coming out of his mouth and nose was formula, so it was clear that he was choking on the formula that he was being fed. And so we called over the nurses, and they were like, oh, it's okay, he'll be fine. And we're like, no, it's not fine. Something's going on here. We need you to get over here and take a look.
The incident haunted Kennedy, and the sound of alarms haunts him to this day, even though his son is a healthy 6-year-old now. Alarm fatigue has become a top priority for hospitals, and researchers everywhere are looking for ways to reduce the noise. Among them is engineer Keith Karn, who used to work in aviation. He's now a human factors specialist doing product design for a company called Bressler Group. He's attacking this problem with a seemingly basic question.
Why can't an ICU be more like a cockpit?
He says pilots would never put up with all of this beeping.
In an aircraft cockpit, you wouldn't tolerate it at all to have false alarms. If a particular component started giving you false signals, you would ground the airplane and, you know, take it in for maintenance and say, what's the matter with this thing?
Karn says one of the important lessons medicine could learn from aviation is to streamline information and to offer it at the right time.
In the case of combat, say, in the heat of the battle, the pilot doesn't need to be reminded that his landing gear is up and retracted and safely stowed away as it should be. But when the pilot comes back to the base or back to the ship to land the airplane, he really wants to know and be checked to make sure that his landing gear is down.
Pediatrician Chris Bonafide says one simple step to reduce false alarms is to put only patients on monitors who truly need to be monitored, those who are critically ill. And he says monitors need to become smarter and only go off if certain conditions persist.
So we have the capability in some medical devices to put delays on to say, don't fire an alarm until that condition has existed for more than X number of seconds.
Bonafide says another simple step is to switch out the sticky sensors that hold monitors in place every 24 hours and to track which patients on a unit are setting off the most alarms and to investigate why this is happening. He's doing a 5-year study now with more video observations, and he hopes that within the next 10 years or so, alarms will finally become the useful tool they were intended to be, alerting care providers only to true problems. Mike Kennedy wrote this song about his family's experience in the NICU for his band Audible. It's called All Alarms.
The summer's over, can we breathe at last? We're giving up on some, but one by one we knew the days had to pass. We stared at images in black.
And I've also posted a longer version of Mike's story on our website, whyy.org/thepulse.
It's just an anxious distraction.